I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo. As the store's owner, I want our clients treated with respect. I want our employees to have extensive product knowledge and be genuinely engaged with our clients. Our pricing is competitive, but our client attention is second to none. When considering a new car, consider Cherry Hill Volvo. Contact me directly. Relationships really do matter to us.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
All right, and a beautiful morning here in Mark Levin's hometown of Philadelphia. Let me go right over to my special guest, the author of the new book on freedom of the press. Mark, good morning.
How are you, my brother?
I'm doing well, brother. First of all, thank you for all the opportunities you've given me to fill in for you on your nationally syndicated radio show. It's been an honor.
Well, you're good. You're solid. People love you. So why wouldn't I?
Well, they have terrible taste, I guess, but thank you for that. And people love you, and they love the fact that you're a local guy. You're from here.
Oh, I am from there. Born in Philadelphia, raised in first Springfield Township, Erdenheim, and then raised in mostly Cheltenham, Elkins Park. And they have an actual memorial there at my house. Do you know that? No, not really. I'm kidding.
Well, I encourage everybody in the Zioli Army. You know, I'm ordering everybody in the Zioli Army to go out and buy your book on freedom of the press. I got to tell you, Mark, I was up late last night reading it. And then again, early this morning, I have a ton of questions for you. But I think the key takeaway is this. Whatever unfreedom is out there, whatever unfreedom the press may face in the future, it's their own doing. Am I summing that up correctly?
Man, you got it. The point of the book, that's why I call it Unfreedom of the Press. We believe in freedom of the press. They don't. And I prove the point in the book. We look at history, what the press was and is supposed to be, its various iterations over time, and what it is today. We're at the lowest point of press freedom, not because of government, certainly not because of the president, but because of the ideology and the party politics that has devoured our free press and the social activism, which is really their purpose now.
What is the difference between fact and opinion, and how has that changed over the years?
Well, that's a good point. And in most newsrooms, there isn't a difference. How they choose news, what they omit, 2.5 years of Russia collusion, perfect example of a pseudo-event, or as the president calls fake news, filled with propaganda and phony legal analysts. We were lied to for 2.5 years, and then they just slough it off and move to obstruction, slough it off and move to constitutional crisis, as they all move head forward into trying to remove a president of the United States who's the victim, not the perpetrator, who's the victim of what's taking place here. Look, here's the point. They debate over what objective truth is, and they're debating among themselves right now, and I demonstrate this in the book, whether or not to just fully come out of the closet and say, hey, look, we're leftists, we're liberal, we're left of center, this is our ideology. We believe that's how you have to define news. It has to be sort of marinated in our viewpoints, and then we deliver it to you. And that this has been going on for about 100 years, but it's really reached a pinnacle now. And the difference between fact and news is you try to be as objective as you can. You know, you don't want politicians and ideologues as reporters. You try to be as objective as you possibly can in pursuing the news. You know where the best news is done? It's not perfect. Nothing's perfect. It's at the local level. You know, traffic, weather, what's going on in the mayor's office, the city council's office, that sort of thing. And the progressive movement and where we are today blows that off. They think that's absolutely ridiculous, that unless they do analysis and interpretation from their packed journalism mentality, then the American people won't quite understand what the news is all about. And so I get into this in the book, what we see on TV and what we hear on the radio, except on our shows, of course, but we don't pretend to be journalists,
right?
Is a viewpoint, an ideology, very intolerant of other viewpoints. And that's why you can see an AOC is celebrated, even though she's as dumb as a rock. And that's why you see there's this endless attack on the President of the United States. And here's the thing. As I said, the press belongs to us. That's why it's in the First Amendment. There with freedom of the speech. It doesn't belong to Comcast, and it doesn't belong to Time Warner and CNN and all that. It belongs to we the people. The Bill of Rights belong to we the people. And the purpose of a free press is what? It's to create a vigorous, vibrant society, a free republic. It undergirds it. It's how you and I communicate with each other, which is why I get into the history of the Patriot Press, the colonists and so forth. What was the purpose of all this? The pamphleteers, the great pamphleteers, Thomas Paine, to communicate with each other, to share news with each other, so we can make decisions as a society, so we can decide what kind of government we want. That's changed. What's happened is, if you remember Obama and fundamental transformation, the media is about fundamentally transforming our society. They're progressives, which is exactly where the Democrat Party is.
Right. And, by the way, we should mention, Mark, this didn't begin with Obama. There are a number of Democrats, as you point out in your book, who have had major wars launched against the media, and I want to get into that in just a second. The book is called On Freedom of the Press. Mark Levin is here, the nationally syndicated radio host you can hear every day here on Talk Radio 1210 at 6 p.m. Also, his Fox News show, Life, Liberty, and Levin, every Sunday night on Fox News. Mark, the Sedition Act of 1918 by Republican Woodrow Wilson. I'm sorry, Democrat. Woodrow Wilson. Yeah. My mistake, Mark. I just got that one wrong here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. When they talk about this president as the greatest threat the press has ever seen, it is so outrageous. And I explain this in the book, and I put a lot of context in the book to demonstrate how the media covered for some presidents they liked, the presidents mm-hmm. who were ideological left, and how they try to destroy other presidents, particularly Donald Trump. 1798, one of our greatest founders, John Adams, he and his party put in place the Sedition Act, the Alien and Sedition Act. But the Sedition Act, if you criticize him or the government, you could be locked up. And reporters were locked up, and some newspapers were shut down, which is why Jefferson ultimately, in a very tough election, defeated Adams. You go to the Civil War and the great Abraham Lincoln, and he authorized his Secretary of War, Stanton, to shut down newspapers, and he shut down some 300 of them, and they put journalists in prison, too. You look at Woodrow Wilson, again, the so-called great progressive. In 1918, he put in place in his party a new Sedition Act, and he locked up journalists and shut down newspapers, and he locked up political opponents. Then you move to FDR. And the great New Dealer, who the media love, which is very bizarre, he unleashed the new Internal Revenue Service against, of all, Annenberg. Mo Annenberg and the Philadelphia Inquirer, because they didn't support the New Deal. His wife, Eleanor, unleashed the IRS against Gannett, and they did this to a number of news outlets and political opponents. And I point out, you know, all the way up to, I can't do the whole book here, but all the way up to Barack Obama. Right. His administration went after James Rosen at Fox. They went after James Risen of the New York Times, 20 reporters of the Associated Press. They went after talk radio. They were constantly attacking Fox News. And you never heard this, well, he's the greatest enemy of the media. Now, why do I have all this in the book? Well, what has Donald Trump done?
Nothing at all.
Whatsoever, except call him the enemy of the people.
I'll tell you what he has done, Mark. He's helped their careers. I mean, Jim Acosta is a household name now because of Donald Trump. He's making more money now because of Donald Trump.
Yeah,
that's
but you
it.
Know what? He's a household name like a thigh rash, like diarrhea. At least in my house.
Right. He's the kind of thing in your house you want to get out of your house.
Exactly.
But, you know.
But you're right about him. You know, he has a book, I'm told, coming out June 11th. And he's portraying the president as the greatest threat to the media ever. And imagine the unethical activity here. He's reporting on the White House. He's creating events. And then he's going to report about these events in his book, for which he's paid money. This is exactly what I'm talking about in the book. This is what is meant by a pseudo-event, or the president calls fake news, where reporters become the news, where they try to create the news. We had a letter from 700, 900 former federal prosecutors who said, you know, we're up to us, we'd indict Trump. You know there's tens of thousands of former federal prosecutors? This is a fake event. So they write a letter, and that's news. Or the New York Times runs an anonymous piece, right? So that's news for 2 weeks. The real news is who wrote that and who's sabotaging the presidency, but they won't tell us. They push this Russia collusion thing because they're assisting these police state tactics with the FBI, the Department of Justice, these intelligence agencies, the Obama administration, the Hillary campaign. That's why they're not covering them from the perspective of truth, trying to uncover what happened. They're part of what happened. They've been leading the charge on that. And so the media in this country today is, I think, at the lowest point the press has ever been at.
You know, Mark, you were the first guy to mention that President Trump was spied on. You were the first guy to say that they ridiculed you for that. And also, I should mention, your book on freedom of the press has now knocked off Howard Stern's book. So congratulations to you on that.
Well, I'm not really competing with Howard.
No, but the media was gushing about him. He was on every morning show out there.
But let me tell you what's interesting about this. There's really been one review from the left of my book, and it's just a vicious personal attack from National Public Radio. Why are we still paying for them? There are thousands of stations here, but this is a woman, very low IQ, obviously, very nasty, very angry. She also contributes to the New York Times. Now, let me tell you something about this. I have a whole chapter on the New York Times called The New York Times Betrays Millions. The New York Times covered up the Holocaust. Now, can you imagine a newspaper pushing the Holocaust to the back pages, rarely covering it, because the ownership, which was Jewish, as I am, didn't want to be perceived as owning and running a Jewish newspaper and didn't believe in a Jewish state and was so sucking up to FDR that they were downplaying the Holocaust. It wasn't until 1944 where the American people understood fully what was going on to European Jews. That is such a disgrace, and how they survived that. And it's even on top of that, 10 years earlier, 1932 to 33, when Stalin was killing the Ukrainians, 10 million Ukrainians he starved to death, the cannibalism taking place there. Solzhenitsyn writes that there he is in a gulag, and Ukrainians are trying to get into the gulag to get something to eat. Absolutely incredible, and they had a reporter in Moscow, the New York Times, who was there for 12 years. He was on Stalin's payroll, people believe. He was covering it up and was writing news articles attacking other correspondents from Britain who were talking about what was taking place in the Ukraine. They got a Pulitzer Prize for that, and they won't return it, by the way. Hmm. And the New York Times says, look, we covered these stories inadequately. Inadequately? That's the word? Inadequately? You know, you didn't make a mistake. You missed the slaughter, these massive genocides, purposely covering them up. You covered them inadequately. Now, how does a paper recover from that? How does it become the paper of record? How does it become the paper that has on its masthead all the news that's fit to print? Why is it that all the journalist students want to work for the New York Times? It is a disreputable so-called media operation. And I asked myself some questions. When is the last time there was a leak to the New York Times or Washington Post or the Philadelphia Inquirer or these cable shows, CNN and MSNBC, that was positive to the president?
Right.
When was the last time there was a news article in any of these newspapers that was positive to the president? Can you name a single host on the MSNBC or CNN who's right of center or even center? You can't. How about this? Why aren't these media outlets interested in the tax returns of the Pelosis, who are worth tens of millions of dollars? Paul Pelosi, we know nothing about him. We know nothing about their five children. We know everything about Trump. All the legislation and taxing and borrowing comes through the Speaker of the House. What are her motives? Does she have foreign connections? The media could care less.
Right.
And so it's so obvious. So what I'm trying to do here is alert America to not just what's going on a surface level, but dig in with facts, dig in with history, lay it out so it becomes unequivocal, and then we need to make decisions.
Well, that's what you've done here, and it's a brilliant work, as you always do, because you are a brilliant guy. And I was laughing out loud reading some of the quotes by people in the media talking about the president. It's horrifying how they talk about him still violating the Goldwater rule, as you point out the history of that. And I think that in addition to learning a lot about the press in this country, people are also going to walk away with an understanding of this. The First Amendment, like all the amendments in the Bill of Rights, is there to protect our liberty from our government. And if the press does not clean up its act, it's going to be gone all by itself with nothing to do with government. Government doesn't have to do a thing against the press. It's going to cause itself to ride into oblivion if they keep this up.
And let me prove your point.
It's your point. I'm paraphrasing your point.
Let me underscore the point you make about my point. The New York Times wouldn't exist today but for investment from the likes of this telecommunications billionaire in Mexico who owns 17% of it. The Washington Post was going bankrupt until Jeff Bezos stepped in and bought it for $250 million. CNN has no ratings. MSNBC will be nowhere after the Trump presidency. Half the American people don't trust the media in this country. That is, the vast majority of Republicans and conservatives don't trust the media in this country. The vast majority of Democrats and liberals do. What does that tell you? That's why I called the Democratic Party press. We had a party press, as you know, in our history, right after the Patriot Press, started around 1780, where Jefferson on one side, Adams and Hamilton on another, and then Adams and Hamilton went after each other. But the point is, you had a party press. They were very transparent. They aligned with parties and candidates and causes. We have some evidence of that even today for anyone to see. The Arkansas Democrat Gazette was named what it was for a reason. The Arizona Republic used to be called the Arizona Republican, and these were the kind of papers back then that identified. They were very transparent. Today, they're opaque. They pretend that they're objective. Some do, and some say, let's stop pretending we're objective, and let's admit that we're progressive liberals and that this is the way you need to see society. There's one guy I have in the book who says, look, we're liberals. Let's own it. Let's explain it. But for us, there'd be no civil rights movement. But for us, there would be no women's rights. But for us, and, you know, the typical stuff. But this is what actually goes on in the newsrooms. It is a monopoly of ideology, and you can't tell a dime's worth of difference between the media and the Democrat Party. And I think this is why this NPR lady wrote this very nasty, brutal attack on me, trying to create the narrative for the press on how to deal with this book. But here's the problem for them. I didn't write this book for them. We own the press, at least theoretically. At least the Constitution says so. I wrote this book for our fellow Americans, and I want them to know that we should be supporting alternative media, whether it's digital TV, whether it's websites, whether it's talk, or whatever it is. You can get news now in more places than you ever did. We are the new pamphleteers. This is the new pamphlet. I know people attack the Internet and so on. I don't attack the Internet. Are there reprobates on the Internet? Yes. Are there perverts on the Internet? Yes. Can anything be done in an evil way? Yes. But they live in your community, too. That's not the point. This is a process. And but for the Internet, there'd be almost no competition with main media today. And the major media today, they're losing cable subscribers. They're losing newspaper subscribers. They're losing viewers. People are moving in other directions. And let me tell you, that's a good thing.
Well, go out and get this book on Freedom of the Press by the great one himself, Mark Levin. You can hear the brilliance in this interview, and there's a lot more to get from this book. Believe me, we've only scratched the surface. Do it now. It's going to be a bestseller. Congratulations, my friend, on all your success in radio and television. You really are truly the new king of all media, and that's a great thing.
Rich, you're a great guy, and I appreciate it. God bless you. And everybody, WPHT. Man, I wanted to be on WPHT, the old WCAU. For years and years and years, and I want to thank the management there because they finally did it.
Well, it was long overdue. We're going to bring you in for an event very, very soon. Mark Levin, best of luck, my friend.
God bless.
God Thanks, bless man. You. Thank you.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.